We're holding on to Ches Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Now that we talked about how a ganav or gazlan is acquiring whatever he stole with shinui to it, as we discussed in the Mishnah and in the Gemara on it, so now let's talk about similarly a shinui as far as where it's not a ganav or a gazlan, but rather a craftsman. So the Mishnah says, "Nosan la'umnin la'sakin." If you gave something to a craftsman to fix, which we'll see in the Gemara, are we talking about, in other words, a keli? So it'll mean, as we'll see in the Gemara, it means that he gave him wood to make a keli, the kukulu, and they messed it up, and they made a bad keli. Chayav v'shalem, then they have to pay the value of the keli. Earlier in the Masechta, Tosfos discusses that it would be even if they did it b'shogeg, okay, we learned earlier in the Masechta, adam mu'ad la'olam, so it would be an adam amazik. Then you have an opinion of the Ramban who says that's really because they're a shomer. Anyway, whatever the case, they're chayav to pay. Similarly, nosan l'chora shida tevo migdol. Similarly, if a person gave to a carpenter a shida tevo or migdol to fix. These are various kinds of wooden kalim. Rashi describes that a shida is a carriage, like the kind that women would ride around in Rashi's times. So the shida would be the passenger compartment of that, and then table would be a box, and migdol would be a cabinet or a closet or something like that. And basically that's what they mean according to all the Mephoshim, although there are slight differences between them. Whatever the case, it's a wooden keli that he gave to this carpenter to fix. L'sakin, he gave it to them to fix the kilkel, and they ruined it. Chayev l'shalom. Then again, the carpenter is going to be chayev to pay for the keli. We're going to see in the Gemara why we need both cases, why we need to say when he gave him wood to make a keli, as well as when he gave him the existing keli to fix. Similarly, v'habanai shekibel all of lister sakosel. What happens if a builder has taken on a contract to tear down a wall, v'shiber ha'avonim, and in the course of tearing down the wall, he broke the stones. Now his responsibility is to take apart the wall and have the stones remain intact so they can reuse them in another building. So here he broke them, oshehizikon, or he damaged the stones. Chayev l'shalom, then also he's chayev to pay for the same reason as before. And here actually you have different gersos about whether the word is v'hizikon, whether the word shehizikon, which means that he damaged the stones, or shehizik means that he caused nezik. In other words, that, for example, he knocked down a stone onto a person or an animal or whatever and damaged it. In the printed Mishnayos, in fact, you have the Gersa Shehizik, and some Mephoshim have that Gersa as well, and they say that in that case it would mean that not that he damaged the stone, but rather that with the stone he damaged something else. On the other hand, again, the Gersa we have over here, Shehizikon, means that he damaged the stones, and Teferes Yisrael on Mishnayos points out also that even if we have the Gersa Shehizik, it means the same thing. So Chayev L'Shalom, so he's Chayev to pay. What happens if he was tearing down the wall, he was banging at the wall to tear it down on one side, and a stone fell off from a different side? So you could have, for example, it was a thick wall and a stone got dislodged on the other side, even though his banging on one side shouldn't have done it. Could be that it's a long wall, whatever the case, the point is. So Potter, then he's going to be Potter because it's not a direct thing. It's a grumma. It's a grumma thing. The im machna samacha, but if it was directly because of the blow, so in other words, he hit with a sledgehammer on one side, and it actually dislodged a stone directly on the other side, chayev, then he would be chayev because that's actually koichoi, that's actually directly from his blow, and therefore that would be, like we learned earlier in the Masechta, that would be like chitzav, that would be like shooting an arrow. And therefore he'd be chayev. So if it had fallen not directly when he was banging, but afterwards, that would be koyach koychoi, and then he would be potter on that. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Asi, in the first part of the Mishnah, when we said, we're talking about, you gave a craftsman, now actually this is the second case of the Mishnah, first we said you gave something to a craftsman to fix, and he damaged it, then he's chayev. Now we didn't specify in the Mishnah whether we mean an existing keli that he's going to be fixing, or whether we mean a new keli that you wanted to build for you. But then in the second case of the Mishnah, it was clear. You have an existing keli and you wanted to fix it. You had a shida teva or migdol, and you're having him fix it. So, Amar Rav Asi, v'yishonu al shenosan l'chodosh, shida teva or migdol, linutz behen masner. We're talking about, in the second case of the Mishnah, says Rav Asi, when you gave him a shida teva or migdol, a carriage or a box or a cabinet, whatever, in order to put a nail into it, meaning you're not asking him to fix the whole thing. You're just asking him to add one little thing to it, one nail or something. The knots then massive of a shibron, and then he was putting the nail into it, and then he broke them. So the point is, in other words, there's no shvach. We can't say that now the keli is worth more because of this thing. Therefore, we can't. Now we have a concept which we're going to be discussing throughout the Gemara over here, which we also had in Kiddushin, called Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli. When a craftsman makes something, is he Koine the Keli through the Shvach that he's adding to it? You have a typical case, for example, in the case we said before, you give him wood to make a Keli, or you give him a Keli and he does a significant improvement to it, we could say that he's Koine that Keli through the shvach, that now that he made the shvach on it, that's considered that now he's coin of a keli, and therefore that would have implications as far as what he pays if he damaged it afterwards. But here, Sir Rav Asi is saying that we're talking about there's no shvach here to talk about in the first place, because all it is before it was a cabinet, and now it's a cabinet that has a nail in it. So there's no shvach for him to acquire it, and therefore now he has to pay for the full value of the cabinet because he broke it. Avol nosan l'chorosh etzim, but Rav Asi says if he had given wood to a carpenter, lasis shida teva omigdol, to make a shida teva omigdol, v'osan han shida teva omigdol, and the guy did in fact make the shida teva omigdol out of them, the shibron, and only afterwards did he break them, potter, then he would be potter from paying the value of an entire keli, then he would only have to pay the value of the wood that he was given in the first place. My timer, Uman Pona B'Shvach Kli, because, says Rav Asi, the craftsman is acquiring the material through the shvach that he's putting into it. So now all he's paying for is the raw material, the wood. So in other words, in effect, that, when we learned this in Kiddushin, Rashi explained over there, in effect, when we say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, what it means is, at this point, before he gives it to the owner, and the owner pays him for it, at this point, he owns it. Now, what he's doing, basically, is that he's selling that Shvach to the owner in return for the owner, the one who gave him the job to do in the first place, is paying him, and with that, he's buying from him the Keli and the Shvach. So you have a machlokas rishonim. Is he koina the entire shvach? Is he only koina the amount that would be the amount that he's going to be paid? But whatever, the point is, I know, and also whether he's koina the guf of the keli itself or only the shvach, there are various machlokas in this. But the point is, in other words, Rav Asi is saying the basic point, uman koina b'shvach kli, so therefore in that case, then you can't be machayev him if you had given him a box or a cabinet or whatever to fix and he or to make out of scratch and he broke it, you can't say that now he should be chayev to pay for the entire cabinet because he was koineh at this point. So all you can make him pay for is the wood that he received for it. Well, the Gemara says Tanan, the first part of our Mishnah says Nosan la'umnin v'kilkalu. If he gave it to a craftsman and they wound it, chayev and l'shalem, then they have to pay. My love, the Yohiv who ate him. Now, the Pashtus, isn't that first case in the Mishnah talking about where he gave them wood? And in that case, we're still saying that the Chayev to pay Chayev and Lashalem implies that the Chayev to pay the value of the entire Keli, not like Rav Asi is saying. And the answer is Loi. Shida Teva or Migdol. No, it means that in the first case of the Mishnah also, he gave them a Shida Teva or Migdol to fix. Yeah, but the second case of the Mishnah talks about that. Miklal de Resha Eitzim. Doesn't that mean that in the Resha, we're talking about that he gave him only wood? Amri, so to answer back, that's not a question. That's not a question. Perushi kamefarish law. You could say that the second case of the Mishnah explains the first one. Ketzad, meaning the second case, is saying, how would it be when we say in the beginning of the Mishnah that if he gave something to a craftsman and he to fix it and he wounded it, then he's chayav, what is the case would be that ketzad nosim l'umim v'kilkul l'chayav l'mashalim kegoyin shenosim l'chora shita teva o'migdol is only when he gave them a shita teva o'migdol, but if he gave them just pieces of wood, then we would have Rav Asi's din that they're not in fact chayav to pay the whole thing. They just have to return him the value of the wood. And if the wooden pieces themselves are still usable, then they would take them apart and they would give him the pieces of wood. So the point of this Uman Koine B'Shvach Tzi, the Rashba makes a point, because in other words, the Uman, of course, he wants to sell, he wants to make the thing and give it to the owner and get paid. That's what he does for a living. He doesn't want to be chayev in it to the extent, he doesn't want to be responsible for it to the extent that he should actually be chayev for a nezek like that. So he kind of figures, I'll keep it for myself, unless if the owner is willing to pay me for it, then I'll give it to him. Anyway, so the Gemara is saying, so in order not to contradict Rav Asi, we can understand that the Mishnah is saying the second case is explaining the first. So it's not two different cases, one where he gave him wood and one where he gave him, a finished shida teva or migdol, but both of them are talking about the same case. One is explaining the other. Tosfos points out in that case the Gemara could have asked, then why did it say Chayovin L'Shalom in the first part of the Mishnah? Okay, Tosfos says sometimes the Gemara will be Medayek on that, sometimes not. Anyway, the Gemara says Hochinami Mistabra. V'Hochinami Mistabra. In fact, it's more logical to say the Ketzad Katoni that the Mishnah is meaning to explain rather than to give a new case, if you were going to think that in the Reisha he actually gave him wood, then why would it need to even tell us both cases? Hashtash mean an Eitzim Chayav and L'Shalem, if even when he gave him wood, we would say he's Chayav to pay the full value of a Kevi, V'loya min an Uman Koine B'Shvach Kelim, and we wouldn't say that the craftsman himself acquired it by the improvement that he made, Shida Tevo Migdol Miboya, would you have to tell us even in a case of Shida Tevo Migdol, there's no chiddush in it, because obviously then there's a keli already that he should have to pay for. So doesn't that prove that yes, we're not talking about two separate cases, we're talking about one case, Nosim La'uman L'Sakin, and what do we mean by that? We gave him a Shida Tevo Migdol, as opposed to we gave him only wood, and then we would say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, and we would say that he doesn't have to pay the full value of the keli. However, the Gemara says, "Imi shum halay iria." No, because if that's going to be your proof from the Mishnah, then that's not really a solid proof. Because you could say the other way around. Tana sefer legaluya reisha. On the contrary, you could say the Mishnah is in fact talking about two cases: one where he gave him wood, and one where he gave him a shida tevo omigo. And you would say tana sefer legaluya reisha. He's teaching the sefer only in order to clarify the reisha. Meaning not, like we said, as ketzad, as in to explain that it's the same case, but rather to clarify that the first case is, in fact, a different one. Shaloi toima reisha shida tevo migdol. Don't think that in the reisha, it's only when he gives him a shida tevo migdol of eitzim loy, but not if he gave him wood, because you're going to think to say like Rav Asi. No, tana sefer shida tevo migdol. No, therefore, the sefer would actually mention the case of shida tevo migdol, implying the klal de reisha eitzim, implying that no, in the first case of the Mishnah, it is in fact talking about giving him wood, v'afilo hochi chayev l'shalom. And nevertheless, he'd be chayev to pay. So you could learn it both ways. You could learn that the Mishnah is saying he gave him l'sakin to fix, and what is that case, namely when he gave him a shida tevo migdol, and then it's only one case, and that would be like Rav Asi. But we could also equally well learn the Mishnah, he gave him wood, and then also he gave him a shida tevo migdol, and the fact that it says the second case is to clarify that the first one is talking about giving him wood, and we would not say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, not like Rav Asi. Okay. Nevertheless, though, the Gemara is going to assume that Rav Asi's statement is accepted by everybody. We may not be able to prove it solidly from the Mishnah, but nevertheless, the Gemara is going to assume in the continuation of the Sugya that most, if not all, of the Chachamim agree with that point. So the Gemara says, Lema Messiah. Can we say that we can support what Rav Asi is saying based on the next Mishnah, which we're going to have on Kuf on the Beis? And Noisin Semel of Saba, if a person gives wool to a dyer to dye for him, the Hikdichoyora, and the vat in which he boils up his dyes, got ruined. So to be exact, actually, the Hikdichoyora means that actually says this Skalkalot Seva Me'atzmoy, the dye got wound because it was overcooked, and now therefore the wool is wound. The wool is wound because he overcooked the dyes. Noisin lids made samurai. So then the Mishnah says over there that the dyer has to pay him the value of his wool. Implying made samurai ends made samurai v'shiv chaylai. So he has to pay him the value of his wool, but the implication is he doesn't have to pay him the value of the wool plus the shvach. The fact is, before it was overcooked in there, before it was left in there and heated up too long, it had been dyed, it would have been worth more. Shouldn't we assume that it means that even if he overcooked it after it fell in, after he put it in? Meaning, in other words, so he put in the wool. Usually it's supposed to stay there, for 10 minutes on a temperature of 200. Instead, he left it in there for 15 minutes on a temperature of 300. Meanwhile, though, there came a point where it was properly dyed. Then afterwards, it got damaged by being in there too long. So then at one point, there was a shvach there. And then still the Mishnah is saying that he pays only for the wool. So you would see from that that he is kona. What would happen is, when he dyed the wool to begin with, when it reached the point when it had absorbed the dye correctly, then at that point the uman is kona it. And normally what would happen is then at that point he'd take it out of there and he would tell the person, your wool is finished, come pick it up. And then he pays him and he's selling him the wool together with the shvach. And that's how it works. But here we would say, because it got wound, we would say, Uman Kone B'Shvach Kli, we would say, therefore, that he was Kone, the wool, so therefore, all his chayev is the value of the original raw wool. So that would prove Ravasi's point, of Uman Kone B'Shvach Kli. Omar Shmuel, but Shmuel says maybe not necessarily. We could be talking about when he first put the wool in, right away it got wound. The leka shvacha. So then there's no shvach to talk about. So therefore, then umen kodev a shvach kli is not going to be relevant. But if it had in fact had a shvach and only then got wound, then maybe we would say that indeed he would pay for the wool plus the shvach. But the Mishnah is not necessarily. The Mishnah is not necessarily addressing that case. Well, the Gemara asked, "Avolik dicha la'achan afila mai noisled make samer b'shivchay." So, what are you telling me then? The implication of what Shmuel is saying is that if it had gotten wound after it was dyed properly, then he would have to pay him the value of the wool and the value of the shvach. Leva Shmuel, less they did Ravasi. Does that mean that Shmuel disagrees with what Ravasi says? Because here Ravasi, fine, we're trying to use that Mishnah as a proof to Ravasi, and here Shmuel is Dafka going and understanding the Mishnah in a different way, in a different case. And Rashi points out precisely because now, in other words, you could always ask, what forces Shmuel to assume that it's talking about that it got wound as soon as it fell in, as soon as it was placed in? Why would we have to assume that? The fact that he doesn't want to explain the Mishnah more straightforwardly, that would imply that he disagrees with Ravasi. And Rashi adds, since the halacha is like Shmuel in Dinim Mominus, that would necessarily mean the halacha is not like Ravasi, that Uman Kodu B'Shvach Kli. So is that necessarily so? So the Gemara says, not necessarily. Because you know what, the Mishnah could be talking about a case where not only the wool but also the dye belongs to the balabas. Many times you go to a dyer, he has a stock of dyes, and he goes And so you give him the wool, he supplies the dye, and he supplies the work to dye the wool. But you could have instead where you yourself are giving him the wool and the dye, and all he's doing is doing the work. So Shmuel says the Mishnah could be talking about that. But Saba Ago Yadehu to Shokil. So then in that case, the dyer, all that he's collecting for when he's getting paid is only for the schar for his tircha. So therefore, so it's not really like an uman. An uman is more where is more like a contractor. You're giving him a job to do, and he uses his own materials and his own labor and everything. Here, it's entirely your materials. So in that case, then that would be why he's only paying. So therefore, so you could say, so in that case, that would be what the Mishnah is implying, that if now, when he put it into the dye, it immediately got ruined, then he's going to pay, then he's going to pay the value of the wool plus the shvach. But had it been that it was first dyed properly and only then got ruined, then we would say uman kodem b'shvach. So in that case, Shmuel can be understanding the Mishnah in a different way than we understood it to begin with, but nevertheless, it doesn't contradict Rav Asi, and therefore we can still say that Shmuel agrees that Shmuel agrees with Rav Asi. Because again, in other words, the point is, uman koinim shvach kli is not really relevant in this case, because that would only apply to an uman who's supplying his own raw materials, and here he's not, you're supplying the dye as well. Now, Tosfos points out that the Gemara at this point could ask, well, what forces Shmuel to explain that the Mishnah is talking davka about such a case? Why doesn't he explain it more straightforwardly? But anyway, the Gemara is going to ask, a better question. The Rashba makes a different point. He says that you could say it is very normal that you yourself who want to have the wool dyed are going to supply the dye as well. And then he says the second possibility, as Tosfa says, that the Gemara is going to ask a better question. So the question is, Ihochi, Nosimlid made Samriva Sammonin Niboile. Well, the question is, in that case, if the owner of the wool is supplying the dye as well, and now we're saying the whole thing got ruined, then the dyer shouldn't just be paying for the wool. He should be paying for the dye as well. Mela, if we're talking about that the dyer himself supplied the dye, okay, so then that's his loss, that the dye now is unusable because he used it on this wool and it turned out that the wool got ruined. So therefore, there's nothing to talk about paying for the dye. We can only talk about the wool, and we can talk about the shvach, and we have this discussion over here. But if you're saying that the owner himself supplied the summoning, the dyes as well, then in that case, the Mishnah should be saying that if it got ruined, the dyer is paying for the wool as well as the summoning. So you're right, the Gemara says, El Shmuel dechuya kamad chilei. You're right, Shmuel is only trying to push it off. He's just trying to say that there are different ways of understanding the Mishnah, and not necessarily does it support what Rav Asi is saying. You could understand it in a way that supports Rav Asi, but it doesn't necessarily need to be that way. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tashma. Let's try to bring another proof. A Braitha says, now we have the concept, which we're going to learn about in Bava Metzia. Several months from now, Be'ez Hashem, near the end of Bava Metzia, we have the concept of lois solin, bal tolin, that when you hire a worker, you have to pay him on time. In Bava Metzia, we'll learn the details over there of exactly when you have to pay him and so on and so forth. It was actually in Shloisha Perachim of Rambam a couple of days ago. Anyway. So now this Braisa talks about a particular din in that. So Toshma, Hanosin Talisa Le'uman, if a person gave his talis to a craftsman, to clean for him, for example, we're going to talk about, so he's giving it, let's say, to a dry cleaner, or to a laundryman, or it got ripped and he's giving it to him to sew up or whatever. When the person finished it and he informed the owner that's ready to come pick up, so now, even 10 days later, even if the owner hasn't picked it up yet and paid, he's not actually over at that point on the issue of lois solin, of not paying on time, because he's not chayev yet, because in effect, the person, the laundryman he gave it to, is holding on to that clothing as a mashkin. And Loisolin doesn't apply in that case. And there are different other explanations why exactly he's not over. But anyway, the point is that the point is that he's not yet over on Loisolin. So even though the guy finished the work because you haven't picked it up yet, therefore you're not over yet. But not naloi. But if the person gave you the keli b'chatzia yoim in the middle of the day, kibin sheshaka ol v'chama, then if sunset comes and you haven't paid him yet, over olam mishum bal tolin, then at that point you are over on bal tolin because at that point you didn't pay him on time on the day that he finished the work. Now. V'sakud, so we'll learn about this in more detail in Bavmitzia, Bez Hashem, but anyway, the point is, the Gemara is saying, V'sakud, that Uman Kone B'Shvach Kli, Amaya Ova Mishum Bal Tolin. If you're going to tell me, like Rav Asi, that the Uman has already acquired the Keli with the improvement he made to it, then there's no Bal Tolin, because the Uman himself owns the Keli at this point. In effect, like we said before, when he's finished with it, then he's selling it to the owner. Well, the owner is not over on Bal Tolin if he doesn't come and buy it in time. So there's no bal tolin. Wouldn't that show not like Rav Asi then that it's not a matter of umen koneh b'shvach kli? The owner himself owns the keli the whole time, and therefore he hired this guy to do a job for him, and therefore if he picks it up and doesn't pay him in time, then he's over on bal tolin. So that would prove not like Rav Asi. So the Gemara says Omer of Mori Breid Rav Kahana the Gauda de Sarvala. Because, no, we can be talking about over here, we can say, Uman Koni B'Shvach Kli, but the Braisa is talking about a specific case about a person whose job it is to comb the clothing. So therefore, there's no real Shvach. Deleka Shvacha, so there's no Shvach, so therefore you can't really talk about Uman Koni B'Shvach Kli. In fact, Rashi in the Gemara in Bava Metzia points out, in a way, the combing, it shortens the life of the beggar. You want to comb it because you want the beggar to look nice and neat, but nevertheless, the fact is it does shorten the life of the beggar, so therefore, in that sense, you can't say there's a shvach. The Gemara says, so for my yava niale, after all, though, why'd you give it to the guy to do that? Lurakuchi, it must be because the beggar was too stiff, and you want him to comb it, and thereby to soften it. Well, so therefore he softened it. There's your shvach. Okay, it's going to shorten the life of the beggar. Nonetheless, though, it's more comfortable, it's softer and warmer that way. So therefore, there is a shvach in it. What we mean is, in other words, the word that Rashi uses over here for gauda de sarabla, the word that Rashi used, flokir, means like you think of like a sweater or like a fleece jacket or whatever, where you have over time the lining of it has gotten flattened out. Now you're having him like fluff it up. You're having him kind of like comb it in order to fluff it up, so that now it'll be more fluffy and warm. So it does shorten the life of it, but nevertheless it makes it softer and warmer, and now you want to wear it. So therefore there is a shvach. And the answer is fine. The Gemara says, Loit Sricha, yes, but the case that the Braisa had to talk about, Bal Tolin, is where, so not necessarily we're talking about as far as fluffing it up, but rather, we're talking about as far as the process of laundering it, the Agre Levitch. He hired the guy to trample on the clothing. Part of the process of washing clothing back then involved that you would trample on it. It was sort of like the equivalent of nowadays when you wash clothing in a washing machine and you have the spin cycle to get as much water out as possible. So that would have been the equivalent back then. We find actually in the Pesukim, we find here and there that a place where they do laundry, for example, there was a place near Yerushalayim where people regularly did laundry, and it was called Ein Roigil, which means the spring of the foot people. And Rashi explains over there that in fact it was called that because, as we're saying over here, laundry, people who are doing laundry, one of the part of the process of cleaning the clothing would be to trample on them, to step on them. Anyway, so now we're talking about that he hired the guy to do that kind of thing, bitcha, b'ma'osa, and the deal was, every step that he puts on it, the owner is going to pay him a ma. So now, therefore, so he's not a kablon. Until now, we were talking about a kablon, which is where you're giving a person a job to do, and you're paying him for the entire job. The difference is you have schiros and you have kablonos. We'll learn about it extensively in Bava Metzia, Bez Hashem. A socher is you're paying him by the hour or by the day or whatever it is. A kablon, you're paying him by the job. So till now, when we're talking about umen koni b'shvach kli, we're talking about when you're paying him by the job. You give him wood to make a keli, as we discussed before, or you're giving him wool to dye or whatever. You don't care how little or how long he takes, time he takes over the project. You're not paying him by the hour. He himself, obviously, when he's calculating his fee, he's going to figure out approximately how many hours it typically takes him, but you're not actually expecting him to fill out a timesheet. Nowadays, you have many examples like that. You give something to the dry cleaner, you're not expecting him to fill out a timesheet of how long he took over the job. You're just, you pay him for, he has a fixed price that for a suit it costs X amount, and for a talus it costs X amount and so forth. As opposed to a socher, as you're paying him by the hour or by the day or whatever unit of time. So now we're talking about you're paying him for each step that he makes on this clothing as he's washing it. Then you're paying him a ma for that. So you can't say that he's koneh b'shvach dahainu schirus. The Gemara says. So you're doing it as schirus rather than as kablonus. So now we can talk about the issue of loisolin, the issue that you're not allowed to delay paying him. So that would be the case that the Braisa is talking about. Tosfos asks that in that case, the fact is that maybe you would consider him a kablon in that case. Rather, Tosfos brings from Rashi in that Gemara in Bava Metzia, where it talks about these dinim, that agra labitri means, in other words, that when you first had a piece of clothing made, it comes from the weaver, then what you do is the first thing you need to do is wash it in order to stiffen it up a little bit. The fact is you want it to be soft to wear, but on the other hand, you want it to have a certain stiffness and a certain body to it. So what you do is you hire somebody to fill up a keli full of water, and then you put the clothing into that, and you bang or step on it over there in the water. So that would be a schiros, because really, whether he's going to improve it or not, you pay him according to the amount of work he's putting into it. You're paying him, as the Gemara said, bitcha, bitcha, v'ma, you're paying him for each blow, you're paying him a ma. So it's not a matter of whether there's shvach or not. You hired him to do a job, and regardless of whether it actually brought about a shvach in the clothing, you're still going to be obligated to pay him, and therefore we're saying that once you picked up the keli, then the Baal Tolin clock starts ticking. Then Tosfos brings another explanation that maybe we could be talking about when you're hiring him by the blow, when again, each step, each punch or whatever that he does to Kaylee, he's going to get a ma for that, then the very first one he does, there's no shvach yet, and nevertheless, he still needs to be paid for that one. So that one, now we could say that Baal Tolin would apply specifically to that. So a couple of different ways of explaining what the case is exactly with this that he hired him, as the Gemara is saying, Levitchi, that he hired him in order to trample on or give blows or whatever to the garment in order to improve it. But nevertheless, So again, Rashi is saying over here, he's only a schir yom, he's not a kablon, therefore Baal Tolin doesn't apply. Rashi in Bava Metzia is saying, because we're talking about that he's being paid whether there was a shvach or not, and the Yesh Mefoshim and Tosfos is saying because you have to pay him already for the first blow that he did, even though there's no shvach yet. So the point is, Ramori Breder Kahane is saying that Braisa is not talking about a case where there's shvach keli to be able to pay him for, and therefore you can't show from there whether umen koneh b'shvach kli or not. Well, the Gemara says, "Well, my the solak adaitin meikra deloy agri lebitchi." Well, if we follow our original assumption that it wasn't that he hired him specifically to trample on the clothing, but he did it for kablonus, he's paying him for the job as a whole rather than the individual details that he did into it. If we learn like that and we say that then there's no Baal Tolin, only when he hired him for bichi, only when he hired him to do one for each blow, he's going to pay him Messiah, and then Rav Sheshes, that would support what Rav Sheshes says. The Bowman name Rav Sheshes, they asked Rav Sheshes, Kablonus, over all of them, Shambal Tal, and over. So if a person is doing kablonus, so schirus, the pasuk clearly says that that you chayav on bal tolin if you don't pay in time when you hire the worker by the day, by the hour or the day or what have you. But what about kablonus when you're paying him by the job? Is there bal tolin in that connection? But amaluhu Rav Sheshes over, and Rav Sheshes says yes, a person is over. So therefore, so the way that we just understood. When we started, when we brought this braisa, and we said it seems to contradict Rav Asi, and we assumed to begin with that we're talking about a regular case of kablonus, you gave your talus to a dry cleaner to clean, or whatever, then we're saying that umen koinim b'shvach, then we're saying that you're not over on bal tolin, or you are over on bal tolin once you picked it up, because now if we said umen koinim b'shvach kli, that wouldn't work. Because then he's selling it to you, then there's no job involved, but rather a sale. And we said that wouldn't that contradict Rav Asi? And we had to explain the braisa differently. If we follow our original assumption, then that would support what Rav Sheshes says. Well, in that case, Leiman Rav Sheshes pligad Rav Asi. Does that mean in turn that Rav Sheshes disagrees with Rav Asi and doesn't hold of umen koinim b'shvach kli? Because after all, if he's saying that with a kablon, you're also over, Rav Sheshes was saying that you are over on bal tolin with a kablon, which would mean, in other words, so therefore that's in effect, we're saying that the woman is not koinim b'shvach kli. Therefore, it's not a matter of that he's selling the beged to you, it's a matter of that you owe him for his work, and therefore bal tolin would apply. The answer is Omer Shmuel Ba'acha v'Shlich de'Igarta. No, because when Rav Sheshes is talking about a kablon that you chayev to pay him, and if not, then you're over on Bal Ta'acher. He's talking about you're over on Bal Tolin. He would be talking about specifically a kind of kablonus where you're hiring him for the job, for example, to carry a letter from point A to point B. So that kind of kablonus, there's no shvach in it. Therefore, we can't talk about umen koinim b'shvach kli. But on the other hand, when there is shvach involved, then maybe Rav Sheshes would agree that bal tolin wouldn't apply because then umen koinim b'shvach kli, and then you would say, in effect, it's not so much that you owe him the money, it's rather that he wants to sell this beged to you and collect his fee. The Gemara says, Lema Ketanoi. Should we say this whole question of Uman Koinim Shvach Kli is actually a Machlokas Tanoi? Because we learned in Kedushin, a Braisa, if a woman says to a man, Aseli Shadim Nizomim Taboys, make for me out of the material that I'm going to give you, make for me bracelets or earrings or finger rings, that Kodesh Loch, and I will be Makodesh to you for the work that you're doing for me. So does that work? Is that valid kiddushin? Kiven shasan mekudeshes. Once he makes this jewelry, then she is mekudesh to him. Divrei the mayor. That's what the mayor says. V'chamem enim mekudeshes ad she'agiyah mamon liyada. And the chum say she's mekudeshes only when money reaches her hands. So what does that mean? So we have to figure my mamon. What mamon are we talking about? Ilema oisei mamon. Do we mean that only when he gives her the actual tachshitin? What Michal did a mayor solve oisem mamon loy? What would that mean? And a mayor would hold that she's mekudesh even if he doesn't give her the rings or whatever. Elo my mekadesha. Well, then what's she going to be mekudesh with? She said, "Make for me these rings," and that obviously means give it to her. So if he doesn't give it to her, the mayor can't possibly be saying mekudeshes. Tosfos points out now the Gemara could have. Why don't we say that maybe she's mekudesh with hanos mechilas milva, which we learned about in kedushin. At this point, she owes him money for making this jewelry for her. Now he's mechol for it to her, and then we could say that she's mekudeshes for that. Still, Tosfos says no, that we can assume since she said to begin with that she wants to be that she wants him to make this jewelry for her, she's not going to agree to be mekudesh to him until the jewelry actually comes to her hand. So there wouldn't just be enough hanos mechilas milva. It would have to be that it comes to her hand, and how would the mayor say any different? And then Tosfos goes on to discuss and brings from the Ri that no, even if they both want the kedushin to be chal before that, it won't work because yesh nava schiros mitchilav ad soif, because every little bit of work that he does earns him a little bit more of a schiros, and at the end you only have and therefore he hasn't really given her anything until he actually finishes the job, and then he has a schiros which he can collect even in Beis Din if necessary, and then we can talk about hanos mechilas nova, but not before that. So that would imply, in other words, that she had to have actually picked up the jewelry. Anyway, so lechora then we have to be talking about, so we can't be talking about osei mammon, the actual jewelry itself. El pshitim my mammon aher. Obviously, we have to be talking about that. That Rav Meir and the Chachamim are arguing that when the Chachamim say only when yagia mammon liyada, we mean we have to be talking about some other money, a pruta separately. Now the savrua. Now when we bring in this question, the Chachmei Yeshiva assume. Everybody would agree that, as we just said, as Tosfos had pointed out, that it means that she first becomes chayev to pay him only when he finishes the job. Every little bit of work that he does, he's chayev, he's owed more and more of the schirus, and she's chayev to pay it for him. And therefore, in other words, so as soon as he does a pruta's work, she's chayev in a pruta, and therefore it becomes a milva. And as we learned in Kiddushin, I'm a kaddish milva ain't a mekudeshes. Or the kula amma, that would be the second one. Or the kula amma, I'm a kaddish milva ain't a mekudeshes. Everybody would agree that if you're mekadesh with a loan, then it's not a valid kiddushin because no money is actually reaching her hands right now. As we learned in kiddushin, milva lahitzah nitna, milva is meant to be spent, and therefore you can't say that she can be mekadesh now with what he gave her earlier. And then, my labu uman konim shvachkli kamiflegi. Well, in that case, wouldn't we say then that the machlokas of Rav Meir and the Chachamim is on this point of uman konim shvachkli? When can we say that? Can we say that when he gives her the jewelry, she's mekudesh with the fact that he owned that shvach and he gave it to her? And then Rav Meir would say that's acceptable, and the Chum would say that no, the woman is not kodesh shvachli. She owns this jewelry. Therefore, when he gives it to her, he's not actually giving her anything that she didn't have before, and therefore he'd have to give her a separate peruta. So if we understand like that, so my lab for umen koni b'shvachli kamifli. Did a mayor sava umen koni b'shvachli, but rabbanon savri ein umen koni b'shvachli? So that would be the machlokas whether he acquired that jewelry by making it. So the mayor would hold that he does. Therefore, it's considered his jewelry that he's giving her. Now, if she owes him money for it, that's another matter. But the point is, he's giving her something that he owned before, the jewelry, which he was koinim with the shrach. And therefore, that's a valid condition. And the chum would say that he's not koinim a shrach kli. It was never his in the first place. Therefore, he needs to give her another prota. So in that case, then this point of woman koinim a shrach kli that Rav Asi was saying is actually subject to a machlokas tanoim. But the Gemara says, "Loi, not necessarily." The kula alma ain uman kona b'shvachli. We could say everybody agrees that the uman is not kona with the shvach of the kavi. Ela hocha b'yeshan of a schiros mitchilav ad soif kamiflegi. The machlokas would be about that point of yeshan of a schiros mitchilav ad soif. Would we say that every time he does a pruta of malacha, he's owed at that point a pruta, or would we say that he's chai and therefore it becomes a milva? And we said you can't be makadish for the milva, or would we say that no, the schiros is payable only at the end? Rav Meir sava einless schiros elulav asoif. Rav Meir would hold the schiros only kicks in at the end, only when he gives it to her. Therefore, it's not a milva. Up until now, she didn't owe him anything. Now at this point, she owes him money. She owes him the lump sum for making this jewelry. And now instead, he's telling her, you keep it, and that'll be the kedushin. So then that'll work, because that's not a milva. Whereas the Chachamim would hold that the schirus becomes, it mounts up over time, and therefore every time that he does a pruta's worth of work, it becomes, she owes him that amount. That becomes a milva. Then we have another pruta is added to the milva, and so on and so forth, until we get to the point where at the end there's not a shava pruta, and therefore there's no kedushin over here. So the machlokas could be on that, but they could both agree that ein uman koinim b'shvach kli. We could say they both disagree with the mayor. Another way of looking at it, the boyis ema could dekula alma yeshna l'schiros mitchilah v'adzoiv. We could instead say that everybody agrees that yeshna l'schiros mitchilah v'adzoiv. Every time he does a pruta's worth of work, there's a pruta that he's owed at that point. V'hochav v'makadosh m'mov v'kamitzvigi. The machlokas could be on the very fact of whether you can be makadosh with a loan. Did a mayor sava makadosh m'mov v'mukadoshes, v'rabbonin savra makadosh m'mov v'ainim mukadoshes. So the machlokas would just be whether you can use a milva to be makadosh with or not. So exactly that. And there is a milva over here because each time he did a pruta's worth of work, she owes him that pruta. But nevertheless, your mayor would say that's fine. He can be mekadesh her with that, even though the money is not right away, even though the money is not now, is not now available. Tosfos actually points out that the Gemara in Kedushin says that if there was nothing left of it, then she wouldn't be Mekodeshes, because not the Ein. So how would it work over here? Tosfos wonders, the fact is over here right now, there's no actual money left, because again, he did less than a pruta's worth of work at the end. So therefore, how could there be Kedushin? So Tosfos leaves the question open. So different other Rishonim discuss different angles on this exactly. How do we say Hamakadosh Milva is Mekudeshes? One thing that comes into play over here is a mashkin. So here he didn't receive the thing as a mashkin. So the bottom line is, we don't have to assume that they're arguing on Oman Koine B'Shvach Kli. We could say that they're arguing on a Mekadosh Milva, and you have the different permutations of that, when that would work and when not. Rava Amar, and Rava gives another answer. Everybody would agree that Yeshna L'Schiros Metchila V'Adsoif, so every time he does a pruta's worth of work, he's owed another pruta. Everybody would agree that a milva is not a valid method of kedushin, because there has to be some money or some object that he gives her right now, and you don't have that. Furthermore, we could say that they both disagree with Rav Asi, and they both say that the woman is not kona b'shvachli, that we would say that he's not kona with the improvement he made to the keli. Therefore, the keli was hers the whole time. So then in that case, why does Rav Meir say that she's mekudeshes? Because we could be talking about that she gave him the gold to make the jewelry, for example, and he added a noifech, which is a type of precious or semi-precious stone of his own. So now he wants to be mekadesh with that. Rav Meir Sova, Milva Pruta, Daita Pruta. So Rav Meir holds, if you want to be Mekadosh a woman with a Milva, as well as you're going to give her a Pruta, then he has in mind the Pruta, and therefore she's Mekadosh, she's Mekadosh with that. But Rabbanan Savri, Milva Pruta, Daita Milva. Now Chum say that no, primarily her Das is that she's going to be Mekadosh with the Milva, and a Mekadosh Milva, and a Mekadoshes, and therefore the Kedushin is no good. We learned about this in Kedushin. We talked about that there was the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that this ended up being a machloikas between David and Shaul. Shaul had said that whoever defeats Goliath, among other things, is going to get a large amount of money from the king and is also going to marry the king's daughter. David wanted to be Mekadosh Merav, Shaul's oldest daughter, based on that. Turns out it's a milva, it doesn't work because Shaul owes him the money and a Mekadosh milva and a Mekadoshes. So then he tried again with Michal, and Shaul tells him, you have to bring me Meir Orlis Plishtim, 100 Orlis from you're going to kill 100 Plishtim and bring me their Orlis. And David did that. In fact, he brought 200. And then the Gemara says, one way of understanding, the fact is, Shaul held, there was no valid tradition, because he held Milva Pruta, Daita Pruta, that the intention still is to be Mekadosh with the Milva, which is still outstanding, and not with the Pruta, which is the 100 or 200 Orlis, and therefore it's not a valid Kedushin. Whereas David held that Milva Pruta, Daita Pruta, like we're saying over here, that Rav Meir would hold. okay. So in any case, the point is that, therefore the Machlokas, Rav Meir and the Chachamim is not necessarily connected with the whole matter of Uman Konim Shvachli. We could say that the Uman is not Kohen B'Shvachkli, so not like Rav Asi, and nevertheless, we can still understand the Machlokas as talking about where he added something extra to the jewelry. And the Gemara points out it would flow to the Hani Tanoi, in which case then the Machlokas of Rav Meir and the Chachamim would be exactly the same as another Machlokas Tanoim, because we have the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, a man says to a woman, Hareat Mekudeshesli, V'schar Shah Sisi Imach, for the payment of the work that I did for you, Eina Mekudeshes. That wouldn't work, because that would be a milva, because he already did the work before. So he had already done the work before, so therefore that would be a classic case of milva. Rashi points out that actually it would have to be, we'd have to be talking about once he returned it to her already, then when we say Einel Asiris, El Asif, like we said before, once he gave her the thing he made, then it's not considered a milva. But here we're talking about that he already finished the work for her, so therefore it's considered a milva. But if he says, for the schar of the malacha that I'm going to do for you, mekudeshes, then that would work. Once he finishes the work and gives her the thing, then we can say she's mekudeshes. because ain of a schiris el of a soif, because we don't say there's a milva over here, because we say that only when he finishes the job, only then is he chai of his schar. And now at that point that she's keeping that, then that's not a milva, that's a mechilas milva, and that would work. Rab Nosson says no. The schar she'ese imach enem kodeshes. Even when he says it's for the schar, what I will do work for you is also enem kodeshes, because he holds yesh and l'schilos mitchil avad soif, and therefore every pruta becomes a milva. The Cholshkin, the Schar Shah Sisi Imach, and Rav Nosson says, all the more so if he says for the Schar of what I already did for you, for sure, that wouldn't work. Rav Yehuda HaNossi says, Be'emes Amru, in truth they said, which the Gemara elsewhere says, that whenever it says Be'emes Amru, means the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, although, since we know that the Rambam points out Chacham can't argue on a halacha l'moshe m'sinai, then therefore we'd have to understand that Rebbe means it's not literally halacha l'moshe m'sinai, but it's a well-known halacha, it says, disagreeing with the other two Tanoim, bein v'schar shal sisi imach, or bein v'schar she'ese imach eni mekudeshes, either way she's not mekudeshes, like Reb Nosson said, v'him hoisif la noifach mishaloi mekudeshes, but if he added a noifach of his own, then she would be mekudeshes, because we would say milvo prota daita prota. So it comes out then that Rav Nosson, meanwhile, doesn't agree with that, because he didn't mention that point. Therefore, Rav Nosson would hold like the Chachamim before. Rav Nosson would hold like the Chacham before that even Hosef l'Noifach Mishaloi wouldn't work, whereas Rav Meir and Rebbe would both hold that if he added the Noifach of his own, then fine, the rest of the work that he did is considered a milva. But now you have the value of this one stone, which is more than a shavah prota, and therefore she's mukudeshes with that. So the Gemara asks, "My ikka ben Tanakam or Rav Nosson? What's the actual machloikus between the Tanakam and Rav Nosson?" The Marashal takes out the words my ikka, because the Gemara is not really asking what the difference is. The Gemara is going to explain. Bein Tanakama l'Rav Nosson, ikka b'nai u'schiros. The argument between the Tanakama and Rav Nosson is about what's the deal with schiros. Is it einem ashtalemes elo l'vasoif? Is it only when he finishes the work, only then he's owed this amount of money and a lump sum? Or is it yeshna l'schiros l'tchil avad soif, that every pruta's worth of work he does, she now owes him another pruta, and in that case, it mounts up more and more as a milva. So that would be the machlokas between the Tanakama and Rav Nosson. The Tanakama would say that when he's saying, b'schar she'ese imach mekudeshes, because he says, ein ol schiros, el ol soif, so only when he finishes the job, only then does she owe him the money, and in that case, it's not a milva. Rav Nosson had said that it wouldn't work because he holds that yesh ol schiros mitchil avad soif. Bein Rav Nosson and Rav Yehuda HaNossi Ikka, and the difference between Rav Nosson and Rav Yehuda HaNossi would be Ikka b'nai milva or pruta. The machlokas on them would be on this point of milva or pruta, where he's makadosh with a milva as well as with another pruta. Does that work? So Rav Nosson would hold that no. Therefore, he made her the kalim, where the schiros doesn't help for kedushin because it's a milva, And the Noifach Mishaloi doesn't help either, because she still has in mind the Milva, whereas according to Rebbe, the Noifach Mishaloi would help, because now that's considered a Pruta that she has in mind to be Miskadish with that. So that Mechalikas of Rav Nosson and Rav Yehuda Nosi would be exactly the same as the Mechalikas of Meir and the Chachamim before. Okay. Getting back now to the matter of cases where you give a craftsman or you give somebody a job to do and he messes it up. So now let's talk about more dinim in that connection. Amar Shmuel, Tabach Uman, when you have an expert shechet, shekilko, so you gave an animal to the shechet to shecht it, and he wound the shechita, and now the animal is nevela. Chayev l'shalem, so that shechet is chayev to pay for the animal. Rashi points out, it doesn't mean only an uman, all the more so if you gave it to a hediot, who's not as expert in shechita, he should say to begin with, I don't know how to do it, don't give me the animal to shecht. And if he tries to anyway and messes it up, he'd have to pay. The chiddush is even an uman, even a person who's an expert at that, nevertheless, if he messes it up, you still have to pay. And Shmuel says, mazik hu pesheahu. He's a mazik and he's a pesheah, and therefore nasik oimel shchot b'mikan v'shachot b'mikan. It's the equivalent of the balabos telling him shecht it on one side and instead he shecht it on a different side. In other words, it was plain carelessness, and therefore he's chayef to pay. It's the equivalent of telling him, let's say, to tell him shecht it from the front of the neck, and instead he shechted it from the back of the neck, and therefore he's chayev for acting carelessly. In this case, where something happened, where something went wrong during the shechita, so he was mazik. So the Gemara says, lomali the meima mazik hu pesheahu. Why does Shmuel have to mention the point that he's a mazik and a pesheah? And the answer is Iyom Maziku. If Shmuel only said the word Maziku, Havamina, Hanimili, Hecha, Dekavu, Beschar, then you would say, you know what? Maybe we're only talking about where he's actually being paid for his work. So therefore, now he's Chayiv even Ba'onis. Avol Hecha, Dekavu, Bechinam, but where he's doing it for free. Loi, maybe we could argue he's not Chayiv, because we should argue if he's being paid. He's like a Shermis Socher, and a Shermis Socher is a Shremah Socher is chayev for certain kinds of things. So, okay, you know, Shremah Socher is potter for oynes, but here the Rosh points out this kind of oynes over here would actually be kein gneva. It's similar to a gneva because, in other words, he's responsible, the shchita itself, which is his job to do, he has to make sure to do properly, and he didn't. You could argue that if he's a Shremah Chinam is potter for everything except for Pshia, so therefore, if you only said Maziku, you wouldn't know that he's chayev. So Kamash Mulan, Pesheahu, therefore Shmuel uses the expression that he's a Pesheah, meaning in other words, and therefore even a Shem Achinam is Chayim. Now, he could have just said Pesheahu, the Rosh adds that fine, he wants it's Loizu Afzu. Not only is he Pesheah, but he's also a Mazik, and therefore he's Chayim to pay in all cases. Actually the other way around, he says Maziku Pesheahu. So he's saying first, not only he's a Mazik, but also he's a Pesheah, and therefore he's Chayev, even if he's a Shoyim Chinam, even if he's doing it for free. However, the Gemara says, Eisvei Rav Chama Baguria L'Shmuel. Rav Chama Baguria asked Shmuel from a Braisa, Hanosin Behem L'Tabach, a person gives an animal to a Shoyset to Shecht it, the Nibla, and the guy made it Nivela, he did the Shechita carelessly, Uman Potter, so if he's an Uman, if he's an expert, then he is, then he's Potter, because that would be considered an Oynas. Hediot Chayev, but if he's a regular person who's not so expert at Shechting, then he'd be Chayev, because then it would be more Shia, like Rashi said before, he should have realized, why am I going and Shechting this animal when I'm not necessarily so expert in knowing what I'm doing. Amalei, La'aber Moichach. So Shmuel answers, Rav Chama Bar Guria, la'aker moichach, rather, with a cough. La'aker moichach, your brain is confused. Meaning, Rashi says, he's like using the expression, Rashi, la'aker, Rashi says, come in my machurim, like cloudy water. In other words, your brain is cloudy, and you're not asking clearly. So what does he mean by that? So another one of the Chachmei Yeshiva, so Shmuel had pushed off Rav Chama Bar Guria And now another Talmud also came Kamosivle and asked him the exact same question. Omalei, so Shmuel tells him, Hashel Shaklas, my Bishoko Chavra. Look at that. You're gonna now get the same kind of rebuke that I just gave you Chavra of Chama Baguya. Don't you realize Tamina Lachu Anar, a mayor, Bakamritulim Rabbanan? I'm telling you a din that would apply appointed a mayor. And you're answering me back with a brisa that gives the opinion of the Chachamim. Amai lo daikus mili shani omer. Why aren't you medayek from the words that I said? Mazik upashayahu, meaning nas and nasik omer lo shchot limikan v'shachol limikan. What did I say? That why is he chayav to pay? Because he's a mazik and he's a pashayah, and therefore that's the equivalent of telling him shechted on one side and he shechted on the other side. Man islay hay svara. Who is the one, which Tana holds that you have to be that holds a bat svara is Reb Meir. That's going to be Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that a person has to pay attention and be extra careful to not cause a hazard. So therefore, so Shmuel is saying, both Reb Chama Bar Guria and you should have realized that I'm using this exact expression to represent that I'm saying my din only according to the mayor. I'm aware the Chachamim disagree, but I'm saying according to the mayor. So what are you guys bringing me a brisa that's talking about the Chachamim different opinion? And so that's why I'm saying that. That's why I'm saying this expression la'akir moichach. Your brain is confused to the Chama Baguya, and to you I'm going to say the same thing. So the Gemara says, "Hey, Reb Meir." Which statement of Reb Meir do we find that he holds of that concept that a person has, that an omen has an extra responsibility to make sure that he's not mazik? Ilei mahor Reb Meir, or are you going to say it's the following statement from Reb Meir? And the Gemara says, the Gemara brings a simon, kolon simon. The simon is going to be the three words that was koshrei, litzboya, and nishvara. So Ditznan, we learned earlier in our Masechta, Koshre Baila B'Maseira, if you have a shirt that the owner tied up with a bridle, with a horn, with a rope, the knob in front of Karoi, or he locked up the door properly in front of the animal, the yotz of the hizik, and it went out and called the hizik, Bein Tam Bein Mord Chayev, Divrei Reb Meir. Reb Meir says whether it was a Tam or a Mord is Chayev, because he's obligated to do extra strong shmira for it. So in that case, we would say that a mayor, so we see from that a mayor says you have to take extra care. No, because you could say, Hosim Lekroi Pligi. The machloikas over there is basically about how we darshan the psukim. Because we said over there that you have, the pasuk says in this week's parasha by a tam, that says Veloyish, by a muad, actually it says Veloyish Munanu Ba'olav, that the owner didn't guard it, and therefore it went out and caused a hezek. And Rameo learns from that it means that both a tam and a muad, you have to have Yishmurenu Ba'olav. And if you didn't do the best possible shmira, then you're still going to be chayav. That has nothing to do with the regular case of whether a person is obligated to take that extra care. So Ella hod a mayor. Rather, we're going to try to learn from another din of a mayor. The Tanan, we're going to learn in the next Mishnah. Let's buy a like odin betzavei shachar. What if you gave a dyer wool and you told him you want to dye it red, but betzavei shachar, and instead the guy dyed it black? Shoch of itself in Adam, or the other way around, he wanted to dye it black and he dyed it red. Reb Meir omen noisan leid meit samroi. Reb Meir says that the dyer has to pay the value of the wool, and meaning that it was only the value of the wool, not the value of the shvach. The fact is, the dyed wool is worth more than undyed wool. So Reb Meir says that he's koine it like a gazlan, and therefore he's obligated to pay for it. So you could say, why is Reb Meir saying that? Because he has to pay attention and do the exact thing that the Balabas said. And if not, then we can consider him a mazik and we can consider him like a gan. The Gemara says that's not really a proof. Hosim be a dayim, chloy mine, because the difference is that he did it be a dayim. We're not talking about we did it accidentally. He deliberately intended to do it differently than what the Balabas said. So, as opposed to the shofet, there's not meaning to do something wrong. He accidentally shechted the animal wrongly and wounded it. But not that he meant to. So that's not a proof from there either that a mayor would be machayev in the case of the shofet. Ela, hor a mayor, rather we can say it's the following opinion of a mayor that we learned back in the third parak. Nishbara kadev leisoka, if a person jug broke in Rosh Hashanah, and he didn't remove the broken pieces, or Nafal Gmalei V'loi Ha'emida, his camel fell down and he didn't pick it back up, and now it's an obstacle on the road. Remeo Amchayev B'Niskan, so now if people trip over it, or Kalim, or whatever, if people trip over it and get injured, Reb Meir says he's chayev for the nezek. The Chum and Potter did on chayev dinah shemayim. The Chum says Potter from dinah adam because the Beis Din can't make him obligated to pay for it. And but he's chayev dinah shemayim. He would have to pay if he wants to escape punishment by Hashem. The kaimelondem nitka peshaya who pligi. And as we learned there in the third parak, the machloikas Reb Meir and the Chachamim is on the question of nitka peshaya when a person walks in Rosh Hashanah and then he trips and falls. Is he considered a peshaya? So the Chum hold, he's considered an onus, he's considered an onus, and therefore we said that since he can say, in effect, I didn't create this burr myself, it happened by onus, therefore I'm potter from picking it up, whereas Reb Meir would say that he's considered a pesheya, and therefore he would say you don't pick it up, then therefore you're chayev for anything that happens because of that. So we see, in other words, that Reb Meir holds that, you have to take extra care, that if a person is not taking enough care, then he's considered a pesheya. So therefore, so Shmuel's din that he said before about the shochet who shechted improperly, then, that would be only according to the mayor, who said nitka pesheya, but the chamim, who disagree with that concept, would also say that when it comes to a shochet, then he's not necessarily chayev unless he meant to do something wrong. Obviously, he's going to be chayev, but otherwise we would say that it's considered. Otherwise, we would say that if he's an uman, he would be potter because that kind of thing would be considered an oinus, and that's taka how it is because the halacha is like a chachamim against Reb Meir. So we'll continue tomorrow. That's the Shem. We'll continue discussing this whole matter of a shoychet who does something wrong and other cases like that involving an uman who messes up and what the dinim are in each of those cases.